laugh through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again, move little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock like I told you, I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again with your host Nick Burnaby here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. Thank you all for coming back, and I'm really happy to be back with you. Hopefully everyone was enjoying the new homepage that me and SM Gibson, who I've got in the studio for the first time in about a year, have been working our asses off on. Pardon my French here, but we've been working on this thing for a really long time, and we finally got to roll it out officially today. You know, we talked about it on Wednesday, and we told you guys that you could check it out, like, in a limited aspect over the weekend, so hopefully you guys got a chance to kind of see it before everyone else did. But today in the morning, we put up, well, I guess throughout the day today, we did more articles today than we would normally do in like a whole week, right? 70 almost?
That's it. Yeah, we're right around 70 articles on the page today. The page, I guess, averaged between 5 and 10 stories a day. Not counting all the different aggregates that we have on our Facebook page and social media outlets. But yeah, we've got 70 stories up right now just from today on the antimedia.org. So hopefully our goal of informing people, the new site's going to go a long way in doing that and keeping people informed of what's really going on without bias, hopefully. You know, it's hard. You know, everybody has their own bias, I guess, but I guess our bias is for the truth and not for Democrat or Republican or left or right.
You know, one thing that is really cool about what we do is there's a lot of different biases, and there's a lot of, you know, there's people, you'll see content that we're putting on our site that is, could be considered, you know, leftist content. There could be articles that you would consider libertarian leaning. But the common thread here is that we're pushing kind of a anti-establishment message. We're trying to keep the powers that be honest. And it's a very tough task because there's kind of been a regression of truth and regression of just principles in the political system in the United States. So, you know, our job here is kind of a massive undertaking. But now with the new site, especially with the My News section, you guys can all help us accomplish this goal. And that's what we found.
That helps keep us honest.
Yeah, and that too. And it signals to us what people want to see, what you want to hear about. And at the same time, it's you guys that are putting the content on our site. And it makes our job easier too, because everyone's out there searching for the news. We get it all aggregated onto the anti-media. The people that are reading the site tell everyone else what is important by upvoting it, and then everyone gets to see what the big stories are. And if you look on the site right now in the My News section, I mean, people are putting up links and people are uploading them. Like, we're already crowdsourcing the news, and this is a revolutionary thing. Like, it's pretty different. I mean, I don't know of any independent news website right now that is doing anything like this. And, you know, we're using like algorithms to help make the process more transparent and more fair, and to help take out the bias of our own biases, because we've all got our own biases as well. But I'm just hoping that everybody is happy with the site, and you know, we're going to be talking about the direction that we've, you know, the stuff we've gone through, the direction we're trying to go in. And also joining us, we have a special guest in the studio, our senior editor, Carrie Wedler. What's up, Carrie? How are you doing tonight?
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
So what was the first day of the new site like for you?
It was awesome. It's so exciting to see the information presented in like a really clean and accessible manner, but also just to see people becoming interactive now. I think that's sort of the next phase of independent media, and it's so cool that you and Scott came up with this awesome concept to push it forward. So I'm really excited about it.
So Carrie is partially responsible, or maybe mostly responsible, for like the raised standards that you guys have probably noticed on the anti-media, from being like just a ragtag editorial process where our writers pretty much just, you know, me and Scott would kind of unofficially edit the stuff before we'd publish it, you know, maybe like 2.5 years ago. And then Carrie, you came along and helped us really like improve the process. I mean, how do you see the evolution of the site from when you first started being our editor to what we're doing right now?
I mean, I think we've come a long way, but I don't want to just credit myself, because it takes all of us to get anything going, really. But I remember when I came on, we would write our articles, and then we would paste them into WordPress, and then you guys would go through and publish, and maybe proofread them if you got around to it. But I come from like a very verbal, grammatically oriented background, and so my first concern was just like, let's clean up the language. But then as I delved into my own journalism and I learned the importance of really sourcing things and trying to be as unbiased as possible while still adding our anti-media flair, I just feel really lucky that I was able to bring my ideas to the table, and that you guys listened to me, and that we now are really meticulous about sourcing. And when we do our original reporting, we're really serious about making sure that we're reporting directly and contacting the people who are making up the stories that we're reporting. So I think we've come a long way, and I'm excited to go even further with this new setup we have.
Awesome. You know, thank you for coming down and working with us while we're rolling this out. And we've had a huge success today. The launch, the rollout was great. Like, our press releases that went out today went like kind of viral. And so, I don't know, I think we had a really great day as like the homepage of independent media. And I think we're on our way to making a really big impact on the opinion in this country, because let's face it, the opinion, the political discourse, the rate of philosophy, the conversations being had at a professional level right now between these politicians. I mean, just the other day, it was Bernie Sanders versus Ted Cruz, and this was on CNN, and we're supposed to be like, these are somehow like the thinkers of our day, Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz. And these guys are like so old, and they're so stale, and their ideas are so bad. But yet, this country is now so starved for a philosophical debate that they eat it up as if like, wow, that was really refreshing. I'm glad to see a debate, because between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, it was like, what the fuck is going on with this country? Is this like, is this reality TV or is this real life? And so I want to, not only with the anti-media website, try to help give people a platform for different ideas. We don't, you know, maybe we have some Bernie Sanders ideas, and maybe we have some conservative ideas too, but I want to bring out some new ideas that maybe haven't been mainstream yet, and give us a chance to explore. So maybe it'll be a little uncomfortable for some people. Maybe it'll be a little bit of a challenge to your worldview. Maybe it'll make you think. Maybe you'll start learning different things. And that's what I want to, like, at least, especially with this show, but also with the site, is make it a platform for better ideas or different ideas.
It's about challenging each other, honestly. I mean, everybody out there needs to challenge us. This isn't about, okay, we have a platform and we're going to tell you what, you know, what we think, like you see with Fox News and like you see with MSNBC and CNN. You know, in their world, they know all and they're going to tell you what to believe. And that's not how information should be exchanged. It should be ideas go back and forth between people. And hopefully that's what the new site's going to encourage. And hopefully we're going to learn just as much as everybody else.
Sounds good to me, dude. And, you know, hopefully the audience is on board. From what the reaction we saw today, it seems like they are. We got a bunch of link submissions. People are voting on the site. I mean, it's taken off better than I could have imagined. It honestly did. And so I'm really encouraged. And this is day one. You know, where are we going to be a year from now? Yes, that's, you know, we're yet to find out. But I'll tell you what, the people listening tonight, you know, thank you guys for being with us for so long. I mean, we've got a bunch of stuff in the making right now. And, you know, we're doubling our efforts. Believe me, I've been working, me and Scott here, SM, I don't want to give away his full identity.
Yeah, that's a big secret out.
We don't want your real name out there. We've been working literally around the clock on this thing. And so we're just like super happy it's finally out. This is something that we've been talking about finally getting into play, like a couple years. You know, it's been 2 or 3 years that we've been talking about
doing this. It's been at least 3.
And today it finally came to fruition, and it's just a really exciting time for us. And, you know, it's a lot of work and stuff, but it's, you know, it's really cool. Also joining us tonight in the studio, we've got Amir. I don't want to butcher your last name.
My Amir bad. Zendanom.
Okay, it's not that hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Zendanom. So, Amir, you've got your own show.
Yeah, yeah. I got a show on a network radio, which is on the iHeartRadio network. It's called Liberty Rising. We talk about everything from history and politics, health and fitness and peace and love and everything in between, you know.
So, you know, we've been taking this radio show in a different direction. We were doing news for a long time, mixing it in with some like philosophy and stuff. But we're really trying to take this thing into a whole much more philosophical direction. I've also got my longtime co-host on the line, DB Schwartz, with us tonight. What's up, DB? How you doing tonight, man?
Not too bad, Nick. Just waiting to hear what the future holds while we crush these dinosaur media and get them out of here.
Oh, yeah, dude. I'm on board with that, dude. So, Amir, man, so your show's got liberty in the name. What does liberty mean to you?
Liberty, to me, it means a lot of things, but really what it's kind of culminated into is the proper use of force in society, as we were talking about earlier, because all of these things in my life have come to me, and I've been trying to build what freedom actually is in the real world, in my mind, trying to connect all those things. And what I notice is when it comes down to it, if you're just free to do whatever you want, as long as you're not hurting anybody, then what we've seen historically and in our own lives is progress, extreme human progress. And when humans are left alone to do what they want while being peaceful, we see just like extreme leaps and bounds in human progress. So it's really cool that what I try to do on my show and what I see you guys doing on your show as well is kind of changing the conversation from Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz to, let's talk about what the next step in human evolution is going to be. Because if people could abolish an institution like slavery, and this is my mindset on it, then we can really change anything in the world. You know, if we have the ability to have these phones and we're talking to the entire world right now, then we can do anything we want. We can literally change the world and make it as peaceful and as awesome as we'd love to see it. And the cool thing I see is that we really do that over here in California.
while everybody thinks that we're
we're
a bunch of little hippies out here. You
everybody's
know?
Been hating they on California.
Ignore them, they are hippies.
But I really pride ourselves on what we're doing out here in California, because we're essentially just, I mean, a lot of people are doing this, but I see us collectively doing this in so many areas in the state, which is just living the lives that we want to live, creating the lives we want to create. You see this with the alternative media, with you guys, the independent media. You see this with the cannabis industry. You know, people are really free here and very expressive. And you can see that, and that's that freedom that we're talking about.
Yeah, and so one very interesting thing, and it's something you see online all the time, because especially with this kind of this talk of a Cal exit movement and California like seceding from the United States and becoming its own country, I see so many commenters online, yeah, good luck, guys. You guys are just a bunch of pussies that are have a shit government. It's like, you're halfway right there. We do have a shit government.
Yeah.
Our government is shit. But we have so many people out here that are super like chill, like freedom-oriented people that don't give two fucks what the government has to say. That the California government, it is what it is. It's shitty, and what government isn't. But the people out here don't really abide by the government much.
Yeah,
know?
I think it's important to note with that whenever people say California sucks and they say Commifornia and you guys are all socialists, I remind them, especially to, you know, liberty-oriented people, it's like, stop conflating the state with society. We do not equal what some psychopath politicians in Sacramento are doing, or LA City Council, you know, just a few people out of millions of people in this city. Most people in the world are just trying to live their lives peacefully and just do what they do. And the great thing about LA is, or sorry, all of California really, is that while the government is extremely controlling here, there are pockets of freedom that the government doesn't control that governments around the country do control. And because of that, it's kind of made it so that the government doesn't have as much control as it seems like they do in California.
I think you just said something really, really important, and it's a universal thing, because what you said reflects on a bigger scale with foreign policy. We talked about it on our show on Tuesday and Thursday. I mean, you were talking about it a little bit earlier about Iran, but you look at someone like Saddam Hussein, who is crazy. People of Iraq were just trying to live their lives. They weren't invading anybody or hurting anybody. Yeah, Saddam Hussein was nuts. People of Iraq just trying to live normal lives. Same with Gaddafi and Libya. Same with Assad in Syria. And people see these governments and go, well, they're all bad. They deserve this or that or whatever. And it's like, we're all just human beings. And guess what? Their government's crazy, because look at our government here. Look at the governments anywhere. There may be varying degrees of it, but they're all pretty much crazy. I mean, you could make Lindsey Graham a Muslim and put him in the Middle East, and they go, that guy's a lunatic. But here, they're just like, no, he's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like associating everybody in the United States with Trump and saying, all of you guys are just like Trump because he's the president. It's like, first of all, Trump lost the popular vote, which, don't get me wrong, the voting
people
system...
People like Trump for a different reason.
The voting system is convoluted, but the majority of people did not vote for Trump. Donald Trump got 63 million votes. There's 30 million people in this country.
The majority of
that
people
is not
didn't
even
vote.
Close to, like,
that's what's important.
It's not even a quarter of people voted for Donald Trump. Not even a quarter. So to conflate everyone out here with whatever it is you guys think California is, I'm sorry, but you got it wrong. You got to come out here and know people out here to know what it is. It's not what you think it is. That being said, I think a lot of places all around the country and around the world, they're not what you think they are. Everyone thinks they know what other places are. They don't know shit, really. Like, we don't know what's going on right now in Florida. I don't know how people live in New York.
I do, and trust me.
So, you know,
stereotypes exist for a reason.
This is one of the things that leads me down to be a sympathizer towards the California exit movement, is that the fact of the matter is that people really don't know how we're living out here, and they don't even need to. The only reason people decide that they want to know is because they think they can tell everyone else how to live. So, you know, it's like, well, we're going to elect Donald Trump so that he can go tell everyone in California that they have to pay extra taxes to pay for a big-ass fucking wall on the border. It's like, well, we live on the border. You could actually see Mexico from my balcony if you look to the right. And most of the people around here don't want a big-ass wall on the border. We don't
in
want
fairness,
a tariff
though, if you
on
look
the border.
Close enough, you can see a giant wall that's already standing.
Yeah, there's already, yeah. There's already a wall. There's three of them, actually. We don't need more of them, dude. And we don't want to pay for more of them here. And we don't want a tariff to pay for it because that means all of our prices are going up. So, like, for a guy to be up there in Washington, D.C. telling me how I got to live my life and how I should be spending my money, and even worse, trying to reduce the level of, like, personal choices and freedoms that I have, to me that is just so crazy. Like, Kerry, like, why do you think so many people kind of just sit around like, yeah, well, I mean, Trump sucks, but... you know, this is the system that we have, and we just got to live with it. Why do so many people feel that way? Because most people, at least here in California, most people don't like Trump, right? And so why is it that so many people are so complacent? They just sit around, well, you know, 4 years, we'll elect someone else, and hopefully they're a little better. And for the next 4 years, we're just going to deal with it and let him spend our money however the hell he wants, whether it's building a wall or if he starts a war over in Iran or if he starts a trade war with China. Not much we could do about it. We're just going to have to vote harder next time. Like, why do you think so many people are just complacent about it? It blows my mind.
I mean, the first thing that really comes to mind for me is public schooling, because this is based on my personal experience and a lot of other people's experiences that I've talked to, but I remember learning at a very young age, like, not just obeying authority. I remember, like, coming into kindergarten and, like, being so terrified of doing something wrong. And, like, maybe that was me being a sensitive child, but, like, that was the first time I really got this, like, hierarchical structure into my brain of like, well, there's somebody above me and I have to do what they say and I better line up and I'm gonna eat when the bell rings. So it's like this highly regimented way of educating yourself. But deeper than that, I think it's the nationalism and ascribing American nationalism to government. That's, I think, what it is for me, because nationalism doesn't necessarily mean government. It means like a national identity and culture and language. But when you fuse that to the government, it gets really hard for people to detach from it. And when you go through school learning that we have a democracy or a republic and you vote in it and people represent you, and if you don't like them, you can vote in someone else and it'll all be better. I remember reading that in high school. I remember doing my homework and like reading about what happens when you don't like somebody and then you're free to take them out of office. So it's something that I think people have so deeply ingrained in them and they never think to question it. And I think it probably also comes from how you're raised as well, because this is like a generational thing of people being taught that this is the best way to live and the best way to govern ourselves.
Our parents grew up under the Cold War, under the supposed threat of nuclear annihilation at any moment by the commie, you know, the Red Scare and the Russians are coming. And they basically, in those times, I mean, think of it, it started off with like the McCarthyism stuff, and it kind of just, I don't want to say it snowballed, but it just continued on to where just before the USSR fell, I mean, people were just, they were still doing like drills and like nuclear drills, like, oh, the Russians are bombing, jump under your desk.
Under
and shit.
Your desk.
And like, it was the level of conditioning is amazing.
I think that was
more
legit, though, than probably anything we've seen. I think both sides of that were kind of staring each other down. And I think that really does go back to the nationalism thing you were talking about. But I think it's important you brought up how they intertwine with government, because I think we see so many people that, like, I think part of the reason probably Trump had the support that he had is people feel attacked for this reason or that reason. There's nothing wrong with being proud of where you're from. And to be honest, there's, you know, we all have differing opinions on this, and me too. I don't see the point in it, but look, there's nothing wrong with being proud of a flag and being where you're from and the language you speak at all. But at the same time, when you attach it to a government that wants to do terrible things, and they attach those feelings that you have for your home, and they say, well, we're going to do this now, and you say, well, I love where I'm from, so go do it and go kill all these people, then you have a really massive problem, and you sell everything you say you believe in because they've tied it to this emotional connection that you have with your home.
Exactly, and that's the problem with blind nationalism. It's actually unpatriotic, because when you just say, well, you shouldn't criticize your government because if you do, then you're bad and you're unpatriotic. Well, if you're not criticizing it, then you're letting them do bad things and letting them turn into bad people and bad institution. If you're criticizing what's going on and saying, look, we shouldn't be doing these bad things, that means you want to improve it. And that, to me, is actually, like, it's more patriotic to criticize the bad things going on than it is to pretend like they're not bad and just say, you know what, you know, they're bad things, but the government's doing
everybody
it.
Everybody knows that, it's though, ridiculous. Because, look, when if Barack Obama's president and a conservative Republican criticizes him, that's because they're patriotic. And when Trump's president and a Democrat's out protesting the street, that's because they're patriotic. But when you protest something that's like, and you're saying, well, they're both bad, they're both kind of doing the same stuff, you're an idiot, you're crazy, you hate the country, you're an anarchist, you're this, you're that. And again, it all goes back to these emotional connections people have. And once people, I think, start thinking purely on an emotional level, they lose all sense of logic and reason, and they'll excuse anything, which is obvious. That's why we're at where we're at.
And I think
in our country,
I think with American nationalism, this is my theory on it. I'll be brief because I know you want to say something too. But I think it's especially different for America because a lot of other countries have like hundreds, if not thousands, of years of history that doesn't depend on what government they had. Like they already had foundational parts of their culture and their society, and that didn't change depending on who ruled over them. But in America, like, the American identity is so much rooted in government because what made us free? Well, it was the Constitution. It was this government document, and people go from there. Because a lot of people, and I've spoken to people who feel this way, believe their rights actually came from the government. It wasn't like they already existed and the government then codified respect for them. No, it was like we were unfree, and then the government said we could be free. And I think that's
even
really
though that
inspiring.
Same government said, your rights don't come from us.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think also it goes to, this is something you learn as a child in your family and especially in schools, is to appeal to authority and to respect authority. You learn growing up, like, respect your elders. If an old person says something, you got to respect it. Luckily, in our generation and the younger generations, this authoritative mindset is slowly dying out. It was why I was always in trouble in school growing up, in public school, because authority would say something and I'd question them. I'd be like, well, that doesn't make sense. Why would I do that? The good thing that I'm noticing when I see these younger generations, and this is where real shifts start coming with the younger generations, the younger generations are asking way more questions than we were. They're not just blindly accepting everything that's being told to them. So that whole like respect for democracy comes from like, well, we have to respect the authority. That was the authority they won out, but now we're questioning it. So and people are starting to question it more. So that's
and
where
democracy,
the shifts are
man,
coming.
You bring
yeah.
up democracy, and that to me is a very huge source of contention. And we talk about this on the show on a pretty regular basis. You know, democracy is a very, very old philosophy that goes back at least 2,500 years. It probably goes back further to people experimenting with it on a smaller scale. But of course, the Greeks were the first big civilization to have like a big experiment in democracy, and it didn't work out well for the first people that did it, and then the second people that did it, and the third people, and the fourth, and then the United States kind of reproduced their own version of a Republican democracy, and it's not been working out too well.
Can we just not lie to people and pretend that we have a democracy? It's an oligarchy. Fact. Done deal. I mean, we talk about it sometimes, and then we go back, well, our democracy is this, our democracy is that. We live in an oligarchy. That is a fact. If, you know, we don't say it because everybody's like, that's not true, that's crazy. It's a fact. It's the same way everybody says Barack Obama said, or Barack Obama bombed seven countries, and I say he bombed eight. Mike says you're wrong. No, he bombed at least eight countries. I don't care if everybody thinks I'm wrong. It fucking happened.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it's, first of all, whenever we write anything on the anti-media, people come out and we say anything about democracy, it's not a democracy. It's a republic. Big difference, bro. Yeah. It's a constitutional republic. It's like, well, maybe it was supposed to be that, but it didn't take more than a couple of years before they started gunning people down for not paying taxes, you know, in the Whiskey Rebellion. I mean, this happened under George Washington. The first president was already putting people down
For constitutional republic, though, that they make it seem like it's this pretty word, but constitutional republic grants the whiskey rebellion, the taxing of the whiskey, and that it allowed for all of that. So, you know, it's the Lysander Spooner quote of the Constitution.
I know in my heart, but whether the Constitution really be one thing or another, this much is true. It has either authorized the government we have had or been unable to prevent it.
Something. Yeah, and so the thing is that democracy is like this sacred word, and if you come out and you say, you know what, yeah, no, I'm actually anti-democracy, people are like, oh my God, you're some kind of fascist or something. It's like, no. Fascism is like even worse. Yeah. But democracy, it really what it is fascism by the majority, right? It's just like, as long as 51% of people say, yeah, we want to build a giant fucking wall on the border and you're all going to pay for it.
I'm sorry, you're all going to pay for it. Breaking news. Michael Flynn is out as national security advisor. He was there less than a month. It's over.
What?
Resigned. He's gone.
That's crazy, man, you know, because yeah. Flynn was... people have a lot of opinions about Flynn, but he was one of the better advisors that that Trump actually had.
Exactly.
So
he openly spoke about the South as principality document, I believe. He did an interview on RT recently or a couple of years back where he admitted that that document existed. And he also admitted he didn't do anything about it, but he kind of blamed it on the Obama administration. But he was one of those generals where we were like, oh, okay, speaking a little bit of truth. Gone.
Yeah, he was one of the guys that he was like a national interest type of figure. He wasn't like the globalist type of neocon type of person, but yeah, he was more of a he's actually unfortunately going to be a loss losing this guy, but you know, whatever, they're all a bunch of bureaucrats. But you know, like, people get so upset when you start talking about whether democracy is good or not, and that's part of the problem here, dude, is that we're conditioned to say, you know what, democracy is like the ultimate final evolution of the human social organization, like the best thing we're ever going to have is democracy. And I'm here to tell you that that's not only false, but it's like very false. Democracy has been pretty bad, dude. Like, it hasn't worked out well for a lot of people. I mean, looking back at like the United States during World War II, the Japanese were interned into internment camps democratically, basically. That it was the popular thing to do at the time. Donald Trump's immigration restriction against people from certain countries, it is popular. More than 50% of people in the United States agree with it. Now, here in California, it's unpopular as hell. But in general, generally speaking, it's a popular thing.
I don't think you can blame democracy, though. I think what you can blame is the government using democracy to do what they want, like keeping people uneducated, by keeping people scared, by keeping people in fear. And then, of course, a large population of people go along with this crazy, insane stuff because they believe all this crazy, insane stuff is fact. But, you know, if democracy could work, lots of different systems could work, but the people need to be informed. They need to know what's going on. And they need to think things through.
And unfortunately, that's probably not ever going to happen.
We get it so much. People want to blame this system or that system. And everybody has a system they're for or against. It's people. We're all just people on this planet trying to live. It's not the system's fault. It's human nature and people.
It's not the system's fault, per se. It's the fault of human nature, really.
That's correct.
Well, but I kind of want to add that I think, in a sense, it is the system's fault. Because when you set up a system that teaches people they're free because they have democracy or a republic, people take that seriously. Like, people are proud to be American because they think they're free. So when you ascribe...
they've got nice colors and pretty melodies in their songs.
Well, exactly. And when you ascribe a government function or a government to their, like, central identity and nature, no wonder it's so hard for them to possibly believe that maybe it's not the best thing, because they think that this government makes them free.
They think that because of the same reason I'm an Alabama football fan. You get attached to colors and sounds, and we've won a lot.
And that's how it makes you feel, exactly.
Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. That's
you'd support drone strikes on Auburn.
Yes, of course I would.
You would support drone
100%
strikes.
100%. I would be for that. At Middle East, those people never done anything to me. Tornado rose through Tuscaloosa. All those Auburn people are like, good. Yeah, drone them. I'm glad those trees burned. Hurry up, though.
Well, you have like tolerant leftists saying that we should be drone bombing right wing protesters. Like, it goes all ways.
Yep. And it's
some people know I'm kidding.
It's been so, people have fallen for this. You know, here's the thing. Like, you're going back to, you were saying, Scott, we're all humans.
Right.
We all deserve dignity and a right to life and freedom. But so many people have bought into this dehumanization of everyone that isn't them. Like you were just saying, Kerry, I mean, people on the left are like, yeah, just go drone bomb Bundy Ranch. We don't give a shit. Kill them. They're terrorists. The people on the right are like, run over Black Lives Matter. If they're in the street, run them over because they're impeding on your right to free travel. You know what I mean? Like, people have bought into this dehumanization thing. And this, unfortunately, I think people that feel the most strongly about it, people that actually say, oh, yeah, run over Black Lives Matter, and the people on the left that are saying, like, drone bomb Bundy Ranch, they think that they're, like, freedom fighters.
They think, first off, they think they're different from each
they
other.
Think,
and they're the exact same.
Yeah, that too.
They're different sides of the same coin.
Yeah, they think they're freedom fighting, and it's like, dude, actually, you have no fucking clue what you're talking about. You're actually advocating killing people because you've bought into a bunch of propaganda, which means that you're a lot dumber than the average apathetic person, you know. And so, I don't know, man. The all this dehumanization has been such a mess, and it's played out the most, I'd say, the most in the Middle East. And this is why we're able to be in bombing. Like you said, Obama bombed 8 countries. Nobody fucking protested.
Yeah.
Nobody, except for that one time in Syria, 2013. No. Yeah, maybe a few that maybe the people listening to our radio show tonight were out there like, yeah, this is messed up, but barely anybody was like, oh yeah, Obama, dude, stop bombing 8 countries, man. Like, this is not cool.
Where was Madonna's loud mouth when Obama was killing people?
If Madonna would have promised to give blowjobs to everybody that wasn't going to everyone that protested Obama's wars, the wars would have ended. But instead, she said she was going to give people blowjobs that
would have not protested.
Oh, I didn't even hear that.
Yeah, yeah, no, that horrible. I don't even know why I said that right now, or why you even brought up Madonna. But
because she was the first weekend, she was the big notarized name going around.
Oh,
the
yeah, she wanted to bomb
because we
the
had
White
these
House.
Huge
yeah.
We had these huge protests the first weekend Trump's in office. I still don't know what people were protesting, but you got Barack Obama again, like you said, bombing those countries. Nobody says anything, but you got Trump in there, and everybody's offended, and then they go, "Well, women, okay." And you were going to put in Hillary Clinton. Well, she was a woman who's married to somebody that raped people. So, you know. The sliding scale.
Here. This whole like selective outrage thing
right.
that's going on with the left. We were all just talking about like they want to go drone bomb Bundy Ranch. It's not really coming from an anti-war mindset. It's like a partisan thing where it's like, I don't want them doing that on my watch because I wouldn't do it that way. I would do it this much different. So I'm gonna be really against you now for doing that. So and it comes, we were just all talking about this and democracy and it being this human nature, but I don't think it's human nature. I think that we can shift the conversation, and the reason that people believe in this democracy as a god is because the conversation is here.
People don't believe in democracy. They want people to believe in what they believe
mm-hmm.
in. And they want everybody to agree with what they believe. They don't care what everybody thinks.
Well, that's why
they
democracy is
want
great
everybody to think what they
do. Well, and the second they lose power, they're indignant and hateful. And
yeah.
the only goal is to get
just
back
to
in
win,
power.
You know? Yeah.
Like, what's the solution to Trump? Re-elect people who agree
because
with
think about how the Democrats and left were talking before the election when Trump was complaining about it's rigged. You got to accept democracy, Donald. This is how it works. Come on now. And then he wins, and they're just like, no! What do I do?
Russia.
And so no, Russia nobody does it. Nobody cares about democracy. They just want it their way. The end.
Yeah, it's like, oh, my God. Donald Trump is a fascist. I mean, if I had it my way, I would have guys with guns taking everybody's money for things that I agreed with.
That's it.
I can't believe Donald Trump is such a fascist.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. God, I would use way nicer looking guns when I stole their money for my drone bombs in Libya and stuff like that.
Look,
I know we've talked about this before, Nick, but being from the South, you see very rigid, legalistic, religious people that it's very, very judgmental. And I lived on the West Coast for a while, very, very liberal. And I will tell you something. There was no difference between those two groups of people. Zero. It was what they believed in, what was different. There was a different set of ideals and moral structure that they had. But as far as accept what I, both sides would tell you, we accept everybody, but those people, they're a threat to us.
Yeah. Yeah, we accept everyone.
We accept everyone, but
they're identical to us.
And it's both same sides. Whether it's the most conservative person in the South and the most liberal person up north or on the West Coast, it's still my way or the highway.
So this brings us back down to the Calexit issue. Are we ever going to bridge a gap in a country the size of the United States where we're going to say, you know what, we live in California and you guys live out in Alabama. We have our differences, but we're gonna be so chill that everyone gets to do what they want, and we're not gonna interfere.
I would say good riddance. But and I hate to break this to the people of California, if you come to San Diego, there's a lot of military bases here, and guess what? The federal government's never, ever, ever, ever gonna get rid of all these military bases. So guess what's never going to happen? There's never gonna be a secession because there's a lot of federal land gonna let.
But it makes so much sense, though, I think, because I
think all 50 states should just tomorrow, but we're done with it.
I do,
but it ain't gonna happen.
You know what, though? To counter that, we can look at secession movements. I like to look at the USSR breaking, the Soviet Union breaking up, and looking at the secession of the countries that all peacefully seceded, most through referendum. And they had a shitload of Soviet military bases on all those Eastern European countries.
That's why Crimea was one of those places.
That was one of those places,
Huge, huge USSR military presence when it broke up.
Yeah, they're just like, Crimea, this is ours now.
Part of Ukraine.
Right. You know, this is ours now.
Temporarily. So, now Russia took it back.
They took it back, but they didn't take like Latvia and Estonia and all these other Eastern European countries. There's no way they'll ever take that back.
Yeah,
you know?
And even going back to the Roman Empire, man, like, you know, at a certain point the Roman Empire had to split in half, and then it was basically like Turkey and the Eastern Empire, and then it was like Italy and like the Western Empire and France and like the southern half of Britain and stuff. So I think places, you know, organizations become so big, and then eventually there's dissent within and they become ungovernable and the differences become so great, and that, I think that's actually what happened during the Civil War era, is like the differences became so great between the North and South that the more logical thing was to have the secession break it apart. Now, of course, I'm not saying I'm in favor of slavery or anything like that, but what I'm saying here is that maybe it would have been a better situation for people to start seceding rather than having one giant federal government. And that's really when it went from a confederacy or a republic or a federation, however you want to say it, to this really strong central government was after the Civil War and after Abraham Lincoln and after crushing the rebellion and all.
There's a lot of lies about the Civil War, and there's a lot of, like, I'm still confused as far as what I think should and should have not or should have happened. The first thing I can say is 1,000% slavery needed to end that second. It should have never happened to begin with. Outside of that, which was, it was a major issue, I understand that. People need to realize that a lot of that war was based on economics.
Yeah.
Because the South had all the money. Mm-hmm. And then they were...
And production, too.
There was a lot more factors going on than just slavery's wrong to end.
Let's be honest. Let's cut through it. The Emancipation Proclamation was mostly a political move.
It was 100% a political move because it was in 1863
of the South.
Jefferson Davis was the president of the Confederacy. Abraham Lincoln was not the president. It had no issue whatsoever what happened in the South.
We talk about propaganda
until 1865.
And the crap they teach us in school. Abraham Lincoln was not a pro-black, pro-freedom president. He just wanted to win that war.
He said,
and the way
he believed in keeping the Union together. that in keeping
back. Going back to what we learned in our public schools, we also learned in our public schools that the states created a voluntary union and came together, and that the states were essentially their own countries, and they had their different cultures and their own constitutions and their different places. And now, as Californians, we're like, yo, we're really different, and we have nothing in common with you guys. I mean, we have things in common, but generally speaking, the culture in California is really different.
Way different.
You know,
way different.
We are. It's a completely different culture here. I feel way more connected to California as I do to the rest of America. You know, so taking it back to the whole California thing, it's important to know, if we're this different and we want to be free, if this is supposedly a voluntary union, which the Civil War obviously proved that it was not, then let us have our freedom, you know?
Yeah. And so, you know, states are starting to just say, you know what, we're going to establish our own rights. And one great example is what's going on with, like, the cannabis legalization efforts, decriminalization efforts, and how the federal government, even under Obama, who was supposed to be, you know, a very progressive, and in fact, he ran initially early on in his career. He was pretty critical of the drug war and stuff. You know, even under him, the federal government was very heavy-handed. They cracked down on California and other states. On the feds came in, I can't tell you how many times in San Diego, cracked down on our dispensaries and stuff. But you know, there's no denying that the states are asserting themselves and asserting their rights and starting to try to maintain a much more independence from the federal government. And it's getting to the point now with how many states going legal marijuana. You just recently covered it.
Yeah.
Is it like 33
there
or something?
There's 33 total, whether it's legalized or medical.
Yeah, and so how can the government, the federal government, which is Washington, D.C., basically, how can they
where it's
go,
legal, by the way.
Yeah, where it's recreational. How can they go around to the rest of our states and tell us, all 33 of you guys, we're going to come there and crack down? They can't do it. There's too many of us.
And even the new Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, sort of acknowledged that during his confirmation hearings. Although he wouldn't commit to not enforcing federal law, he also acknowledged, like, we simply don't have the resources for that. So it's exciting to see. And then someone in Congress, there are actually multiple lawmakers who have submitted bills to protect states' rights on marijuana, which is really exciting and cool. I mean, there's an Orange County congressman who, like, he's all in favor of the refugee ban. No problem
Dana
with that.
Dana Rohrabacher,
yeah,
right?
Dana Rohrabacher.
Yeah, it's because Dana Rohrabacher used to trip acid when he was younger, and he smoked a lot of weed, and he's wrote about this stuff. So naturally, he's one of the neocons in California that's super down for the drug, or
Pro,
not
yeah.
down for the drug war.
It's like, hey, yeah. I don't got a problem with weed or anything, but, you know, we should kill basically any brown person around the world.
Yeah.
Also, fun totally fact cool. about Dana Rohrabacher, he claims he used to be an anarcho-capitalist, and then evolved into a neocon. So we see that a lot.
Yeah,
in,
that's been
the
going on
today.
Lot,
I know,
recently,
right?
Right? With Trump and everything.
Yeah, he started it just like a few decades earlier.
Paul
you know,
Ryan make neoconservatism great again.
Child of Ayn Rand at some point was related to Ron Paul somehow, and the next thing you know, he's a Bush. Who would have thought?
Oh man, good shit. Hey, that being said. Wednesday night, we're going to have a very interesting radio show. We're going to have an anarcho debate. So we're anticipating some very interesting conversation on Wednesday night. We've already confirmed, or we
it's going to be a surprise. It's going to be good names. I'm going to stop
It's
going to be really, really good.
People.
We're not going to tell you who, because it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, we've got some pretty well-known people.
Exciting than Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders.
Yeah,
you'll recognize the names. We'll say that.
In 2 minutes, you're going to know more about, you're going to learn more new things than you heard in 2 hours between Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders. I guarantee you that. The problem with Bernie Sanders and Ted Cruz is that we've heard that 1,000 fucking times before. And guess what? It ain't working. So
we didn't try it Bernie's way.
Yeah, dude. I mean, we're going to talk about some fresh ideas, and they're going to be provocative. You may find some of them uncomfortable. But they're going to be – these are the conversations we need to be having if we're going to be talking about evolving as a species, because
We can no longer remain stagnant. I mean, democracy's been around for a couple thousand years. Our technology has grown more in the last 10 years than our political philosophy has grown in the last 2000. It's unbelievable what's going on. Like, the technology and the innovation going on is going exponential, and our political discourse is actually devolving. It's getting worse. There's like a bubble going on here where there's something's going to have to give, and it's going to happen. I'm guaranteeing you, it's going to happen sometime pretty soon. And we need to explore new ideas so that we have ideas in place when the chips fall. We know how to collect them back together and make them rearrange them in a better fashion, I think. And that's why we need to talk about philosophy and new ideas, because if not, when things devolve here, and looking back at historically what have happened with republics and democracies, they all become, we end up, the next guy in line is an emperor.
Yeah.
The next person that's going to run the United States after Trump, or maybe after the next guy after Trump, is going to be an emperor. And so maybe it's time we start, instead of devolving, to start like actually evolving and improving it. Because evolution is about getting better over time, not getting worse. Like, you don't evolve and then reset and then regress and then evolve, reset, and then regress again. Evolution gets better over time, dude. Like, it gets, you get more efficient, you get more refined, you get more specialized. What we've been doing all this time as humanity, and I don't know if it's part of human nature, is it with the pitfalls of human nature or what, but we haven't evolved politically for about 2,000 years, man. It's bad. It sucks. We're stuck.
We've gone through periods. I do believe we've gone through periods, but I'll say this. Where we're at today is all that matters. It doesn't matter what happened 50 years ago, and I think that's part of the reason we get into the problems we have, because people look at history, well, it worked, you know, 1776. Guess what? It's 2017. And I hate to break this to people, but the cat's out of the bag. Like, we're not going backwards now. Like, we're at where we're at, and it's time to start dealing in reality. And I, you know, we're talking about democracy and the whole oligarchy and all that argument. And I think to a degree, the United States government post Eisenhower, Kennedy figured out how to kind of control things to a degree. And then the internet happened. And because the internet happened, they can't control people anymore. Because there's too many people talking and spreading too many ideas, and they're going, wait, what happened over there? Uh-huh. And there's so much stuff going on that nobody would have ever seen or known. We're not going back. We all maybe want to, but that's over with. We have to stop looking back at in the past. We're in a new day and age, and we have to figure out how we're going to move forward.
If Alex Jones likes his 1776, he can keep it. You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying, man. 1776, there may have been some slight, ever so
there's
slight.
There's nothing wrong. First off, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not faulting or saying they're you know, people want to make fun of it or people want to embrace it. I don't think either is good, because it's over. It's done.
But not for the Trump crowd, because Trump got elected on that idea of nostalgia.
I understand. Yes, but it's history, and we can learn from that history, but we have to move forward. And we're such in a completely different day and age, and we're all so divided in each other's throats. And it's both parties, whether it's Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump, they play on the fear and the divisiveness to get in power to begin with. So it benefits them. All this division benefits them.
Yeah, I mean,
Trump figured out how to carve out his niche. That's how he got where he got. He knew he could divide people enough to get where he needed to go.
I have like a more positive outlook on this, and it's like all I have to do is kind of look around this room and look at the walls and the paper and the computers and all. And I'm like, dude, everything around us is evolving right now, and there's like this one institution, this one thing that's holding us back from completely just having this, like the magic of this room. Because if you look at this room and then this room 10 years ago and the design from 20 years ago and 30 years ago in just an apartment, that's like mind-blowing evolution, nobody thinks about these things, you know? But the fact that there are millions of people that had to come together peacefully to put these walls together, the shade of this paint, the wood that they used in the building, these have all changed over the last 50 years, and they keep changing, and they keep getting better, and they keep progressing. And then humans are all coming together and finding the best ideas and services and products in these areas, and then we just stop when this one institution is involved, you know? So
the government comes around and says, look, millions of people through thousands of years came up how to design building these apartment buildings and getting all the materials together, but we're not going to give you the permit, dude. Sorry, bro. You got to give us an extra $10,000. You got to give us an extra $10,000 so you're not building your apartment.
Hey, there's a story real quick. There is a story we have up on the antimedia.org right now about a person cutting hair for homeless people. And guess what? Nope. You didn't have the right permit.
Under investigation.
For free.
I want to go help homeless people. Nope.
Nope. Oh, no. Nope.
Well, we've already crossed that bridge. You can't feed homeless people in this country. You can't give them blankets.
And that's, let them sleep in their cars.
That's in Arizona, too. They're not commies out there.
Yeah.
Freedom-loving patriots. Why don't they let people cut hair? Make cosmetology free again. Jesus, dude.
Yeah, it used to be if you grew your hair long, you were a rebel. Now you go cut somebody's hair for free, then you're a rebel.
Yeah. Put you on the most wanted list out there in Arizona. Where was that, Tucson?
Yes,
in Tucson. This is a real story. There's a guy in Tucson being investigated by the government because he cut homeless people's hair for free.
And he's a student. Like, he's just somebody who's trying to get through college. I think it's college.
Cosmetology.
Yeah. And because he doesn't have an official license yet, he's under investigation. This is, like, mind-blowing shit.
Yeah, in the state
this
of California,
ridiculous.
You can't cut hair unless you've been doing it under another licensed barber for 10 months. For free.
That's the craziest thing I have ever heard in my life.
And you
like, for
you
real. Do you understand that the government's telling people, hey, you have to have our permission to cut somebody's hair?
You have to practice for 10 months, too, and have this many hours.
Dude, the most...
And don't...
Soon the... go ahead, DB.
I was going to just say, don't cops only go to academy for, like, 5 months?
Yeah, that's actually a thing. You have to go in California, you have to be in barber school for longer than the police academy.
Good point.
Oh my god, dude. Unbelievable. And I just read it was only like 2 weeks ago, I read a story that some state was not decriminalizing, but making it legal for you to braid hair.
South Dakota.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's now legal to braid hair in South Dakota. It's like, wow, I want to move to South Dakota. You can braid hair out there. That's awesome, right?
You need a license for that out here, man.
So
you know? That's cosmetology in California.
Tell me, you talk all the shit you want about California. Them fools in Arizona can't even cut hair. We could smoke all the weed we want and do coke.
Yeah.
We can do coke and we don't go to jail for it out here. Kiss my ass if you don't.
Meth
think
and heroin,
free.
Dude.
You could smoke meth on the street and you don't go to jail here.
As long
See,
as you
they
don't
are hippies. Don't listen to them. They're all hippies. There's meth smoking hippies.
The hippies out here are bald headed, smoking meth on the corner. Dude. Anyway, God, dude, it's such a crazy country. It's so different all around. I mean, I guess in Arizona, maybe it's not culturally appropriate to cut hair for free.
Well, keep in mind, you need permits to protest.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, in the land of the free, you need a permit from the government you're protesting to protest them.
Yeah.
That's it.
I'm gonna start going around running around permitted protesters. I'm going to start running them over in my car because they're blocking my right-of-way in traffic.
I have a right
to travel. If you're blocking the road, I don't give a shit if you're doing it legally or not. I'm running people over because...
Start the anti-pro movement, Nick.
I got to... Wait. There's a state where you could do that now, right? Where is that? North Dakota? You could do that in North Dakota.
You what? Yeah.
They've decriminalized. They're trying to decriminalize running people over in some of these states. Tell me we're not different.
Tennessee just did it.
Yeah, there you go. Tennessee was one of
multiple states. Or
Louisiana, I think, is doing it.
Well, first off, when we want to talk about cultures in any state that should secede, it should be Louisiana. They've kind of already done it. Just. If you've never been in Louisiana, you have no idea what I'm talking about. It's their own country.
All right, guys.
They got
that's
their own
the,
language out there.
That's the end of the show. Thank you all for tuning in. Catch us on Wednesday, the Anarchist Debate. Tomorrow night, SM Gibson. I'll probably be joining them to start it.
Yo, here we go, go through the stereo.